It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. While the state of Illinois entered the Union as a non-slave state in 1818, for all practical purposes, Illinois embraced slavery at its founding. Frank Cicero Jr. is the author of Creating the Land of Lincoln, the History and Constitutions of Illinois, 1778 to 1870. Cicero tells GLT's John Norton slavery was a legacy of the French inhabitants of the 1600s and Anglos and Americans of the 1700s. He says Illinois' first governor, first lieutenant governor, and president of the state's first constitutional convention were all slaveholders.
A lot of them came over from Kentucky. Illinois, as many of us in the North don't fully realize, is bordered by Kentucky and in part by Tennessee in the southern part. A lot of slaveholders had come across from Kentucky, Tennessee, but also from other places in the East.
It is interesting how Illinois settled, because it did settle from the south and up into the middle of the state, and then later it settled in the north from New England and Europe. Here in the middle of Illinois, where we're at, we're like smack dab in the middle of Illinois in McLean County. You go about 30 miles south of here at most, and you can tell the south begins. Where you go north of that, it feels more like Wisconsin, and it's like Bloomington Normal is, and McLean County is almost the dividing line between the north and south, even in Illinois, not just geographically, but from how people settled the state.
That's correct. The settlement came up and from the south until, the 1820s, 1830s, when the construction of the Illinois-Michigan Canal in the north began. There began to be a lot of immigration. A lot of Irish immigrants were brought in. A lot of people began coming in from across the lakes. When the Erie Canal was finished in New York in 1825, thereafter, settlement increased in the north and changed the character of the state.
It wasn't out of the question when Illinois became a state 200 years ago that it would enter the Union as a non-slave state. It was fairly close.
There were a lot of people who thought it should come in as a slave state, that the Constitution should permit outright chattel slavery. And in fact, two years, after the Constitution was adopted, an effort was undertaken to revise the Constitution in order explicitly to allow chattel slavery rather than the contrived devices that the 1818 convention created.
Well, I'm going to get to that in just a bit. Let's go back to 1818. Slavery was not permitted by the Constitution in Illinois, but as you write in Creating the Land of Lincoln, essentially it was slavery in the form of indentured servitude. Can you talk about how it came to be that slavery was outlawed, but indentured servitude was okay?
Well, the Illinois Constitution in 1818, like some others, had a paragraph flat out prohibiting slavery. And then it had several paragraphs of exceptions for so-called indentured voluntary servants. Now, indentured service was an old thing. It goes way back. English settlement used to come in with people who were contracted to serve for several years as a servant and so on. But this was different, because they were blacks. Many of them were blacks brought in from other states. And the provision said, if they don't agree to a voluntary agreement, a quote unquote voluntary agreement, they could be, within 60 days, they could be shipped back to the slave states. So they had no real choices, no real voluntariness. Many of the contracts were for 20, 30, 50 years, 99 years in some cases. And it was slavery for all practical purposes.
When what is now Illinois was part of the Indiana Territory and then the Illinois Territory, when that split off, wasn't, and it was part of the Northwest Territory at one point, right?
Correct.
Wasn't part of that territory agreement that slavery would not be allowed?
The Northwest Ordinance in the Northwest Territory was not supposed to allow slavery. It was interpreted by the slaveholder officials from Ohio that meant slavery being adopted hereafter, after it became a territory or after it became a state. And that was the exception that basically was interpreted in Illinois. Illinois had been settled beginning 1690s and later by French who had slaves brought up from the Caribbean. And one of the exceptions of the prohibition, one of the permissions, was for people who had slaves who were born as the old French slaves, to continue as slaves. That was a condition. Also, Illinois was, before 1800, it was a county of Virginia for a short time. And one of the things that Virginia insisted on was that there be slavery permitted.
We're talking with Frank Cicero Jr. He's the author of the new book, Creating the Land of Lincoln. It's the history and constitutions of Illinois from 1778 through 1878. And this is GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. I want to move on and talk about the Illinois northern border and how that came to be. That's a fascinating political story in its own right, and it had major political ramifications on the state in its history. Can you briefly just outline how that northern border came to be?
Yeah, I think it can be outlined briefly. Under the Northwest Ordinance, which governed the old Northwest Territory, was intended to allow five states, three on a lower tier, and that turned out to be, of course, Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois, and then upper tier states. The provision, however, was that the northern boundary of those southern states, that is the southern tier, would have their east-west boundary, the north, through the southernmost point of Lake Michigan. And that would mean no shoreline. When the Illinois Act, when the Act came before the Illinois, before the Congress, excuse me, to enable Illinois to form a constitution and become a state, one man, the non-voting delegate from the territory of Illinois, Nathaniel Pope, who was a Kentuckian by origin, got an amendment to the Enabling Act that said that the boundary would be extended 60 miles north of the southern tip of the lake. That included then Chicago, which would not have been in the state originally. It included what would be the mouth of the Illinois Michigan Canal, which opened commerce down through northern Illinois to the Illinois River, to the Mississippi, and on to the Gulf. And that was achieved in 1818 in April by one man who garnered the votes in the Congress to make that change, a huge change. Without that change, Illinois would have basically been a southern state, much smaller, much less commercial development, et cetera.
Did he have the vision to know that an area right around what is now Chicago would develop because of that, the access to the Chicago River and the Lake Michigan shorefront?
Yeah, there were two things going on. Historically, the route from the Illinois River, which became split off as you went north into the Des Plaines River and the Kaskaskia River in Indiana, those two rivers would be the route that would take you to Lake Michigan and on down to the Illinois River. There was a small area of 6 miles or so that was a portage between the Chicago River and Illinois River. That area became included within the state and enabled the development of the Illinois-Michigan Canal, et cetera. But it was a historically well-known trail. But the canal and that development opened up commerce to the south and opened up commerce across the lakes to the east and eventually resulted in settlement of northern Illinois.
Well, let's talk about that. So not only now do you have access to Lake Michigan and the Chicago River and ultimately then the Illinois River and the Mississippi, but it also, moving the border that far north, also included a lot of land now in northern Illinois. Did Pope have a vision that would have a difference for the state of Illinois as well?
Yes, he did. And that's one of the things that is remarkable, because the two reasons he expressed for making this boundary extension were, one, Illinois, if without it, will be a southern state settled from the south. And then he said confederacies like the United States were prone to disunion. And then in the event disunion happened, under those circumstances, Illinois would be a southern state and go with the South. On the other hand, he said, opening this area up will open up commerce to the north and the east, result in commercial development and so on, which will assure that Illinois is a northern state and will become part of any northern breakup, helping to prevent a southern breakup. Very, very remarkable foresight. Slaveholder from Kentucky in 1818.
Well, that was my next question. Was Nathaniel Pope a slaveholder, and was he a pro-slavery person?
Well, he was a slave owner for much of his life. He was the first federal judge in Illinois and was a federal judge for many years, from 1819 until he died in 1850. And for most of that time, yes, he still was a slaveholder.
Creating the Land of Lincoln is the new book by Frank Cicero Jr. He's speaking with us via Skype on GLT's Sound Ideas. Well, let's talk about that northern area of Illinois then, because it had political, huge political implications on the state. Did he understand that people from New England and Europe would be moving into that northern part of the state and change the dynamics of the politics versus, you know, the folks who settled the southern Illinois?
I think he did. He expressed that. First, some facts. The Boundary Amendment added 14, what are now 14 counties and 8,500 square miles. So it was not a small amendment. It was about, that territory is about, I think, 18 or 19% of what the state is now. Secondly, the Army engineers and others were talking about creating this canal to link the Illinois River to Lake Michigan and the Erie Canal. Everyone saw that coming. Mm-hmm. Great prospect. 1825 was the Erie Canal opening, and he saw that coming as well as did others, and that was what he was trying to enable.
And it did change the political dynamics of the state itself, where the southern part of the state was very pro-slavery, or at least pro-indentured servant, but the northern part of the state was more abolitionist.
You know, John, that's interesting, because when I first, I mean, I grew up in Illinois. I grew up in Cook County, but right down in the southwest part near the Illinois-Michigan Canal. And when I started to look at doing something on Illinois history, I picked up a book on the canal, and there was one sentence that said, the Amending Act, the Enabling Act, amended to add this territory to Illinois. And as soon as I found out how much it was, my immediate reaction was, holy cow, that's the area where all of these northern votes came from to enable the Republican Party. That's the area that in later years, of course, was dominated by Democrats in the north. But at that time, it was an area that enabled the Republican Party to carry elections instead of the Democratic slaveholders from the southern part of the state.
Well, it's interesting what you write about in light of today's political climate, that the first Illinois Constitution allowed for both citizens and non-citizens to vote. And of course, that meant just white males. What was the reasoning behind allowing non-citizens to vote back in when Illinois became a state?
Well, that was not only an issue in 1818. That was a big issue in the next convention in 1847, and a big issue in the two later conventions in the 19th century. The rationale was very simple. A lot of these people were landowners, and they did not have to be citizens, but they had to be white to vote, and they had to be either citizens or landowners. Much of the land was settled by squatters and others who were landowners by possession or had become landowners. And that was an issue not only in 1818, as I said, it was an issue in other constitutions. And then it became political because the immigrants that were filling up the northern area with the import of 100,000 Irishmen to work on the Illinois-Michigan Canal and others, these people were not citizens. And the move by Republicans at that time was to allow the non-citizens to vote. So it was a huge battle for three constitutions.
Frank Cicero Jr. also says the 1869 convention included protracted debate over whether to allow African Americans to vote, even though the Civil War was over and the 15th Amendment allowing blacks the franchise was in place. GLT's John Norton talked with Cicero via Skype. He's the author of a new book, Creating the Land of Lincoln, The History and Constitutions of Illinois, 1778 to 1870. You're listening to Sound Ideas.